What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Haas McCook, aka Friar Haas, is a retired chartered professional civil engineer researching and writing on Bitcoin's environmental, economic, and spiritual impact since 2014. Recently, he has written several articles about Bitcoin's positive environmental impact, including projecting Bitcoin's future energy use, Bitcoin emits less than 2% of the world's military industrial complex carbon emissions, Bitcoin emits less than 5% of the legacy financial sector's carbon emissions, and a comparison of Bitcoin's environmental impact with that of gold and banking, all published in Bitcoin Magazine, along with several other notable pieces, including The Passion of the Believers, which was published on his Medium blog, as well as in the Bitcoin Times Volume 2. Friar Haas, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Keys be upon you. Thank you for having me. It's been a long time in the making, but we finally coordinated it over different time zones and lockdowns. And yeah, it's fantastic to be here.
Friar Haas, it is awesome to have you here. I'm super excited to connect. I do realize it's taken us a bit of time to get on the show together. And, you know, in retrospect, I'm kind of relieved because I've taken, it's given me more time to to grasp your work. And when I first came across you, I think you wrote the foreword in 21 Lessons for Gigi's book.
Yes,
is that correct? Yeah. So maybe that was the first time I really was like, okay, hold on. I got to know like a little bit more about who Friar Haas is. And I'm just kind of curious though, like how did you pick your Twitter handle and what does the word friar mean to you?
So it's a long conversation. I suppose it's a difficult question to start with. And I'm sure like the answer will reveal itself, you know, I suppose over the course of our chats, but I'll make the big ridiculous statements like up front to hopefully, you know, hook the listener in. And I hope you'll find that by the end of it, like it's not crazy at all. So for example, we've got the census being posted out in Australia here in August. We got to fill out the census and I will be unironically and truthfully be declaring my religion on the census as Bitcoin. You know, Friar Haas is just a small part of that religious passion for Bitcoin. So a lot of like people mock us and say, you know, we're religious and we're in a cult and all that kind of stuff. I say, you know, who cares? Embrace it. We potentially, you know, have the world's most impactful, peaceful, meaningful religion ever created. So big statements. It'll all depend on what your definition of a religion actually is. But I'm sure we'll get into the details of the nitty gritty and definitions to actually see how Bitcoin does fit in as a non-theistic religious framework for life.
Sure. Now, when you say non-theistic, does that line up with secular?
Yeah, it just means that it's a religion that just doesn't have a god attached to it. It doesn't have a deity. So, for example, Taoism is a religion, but there is no, you know, god character in Taoism. It doesn't have a deity. It's more based, you know, submission to nature and whatnot. So a religion, you know, like a lot of people say that, you know, modern day, you know, communism, you know, is a non-theistic religion. So for me, you know, the definition of being a religious Bitcoiner absolutely does not preclude you from being a religious anything else. It is a non-rival religion. So basically, the dictionary definition of religion, basically in the broadest sense, is a set of beliefs and a set of rituals that you adhere to with devotion. So if you pick up the Oxford Dictionary, you look up the word religion, that's what it says. There's no mention of God. There's no mention of prophets. There's no mention of anything really except a set of beliefs, a set of principles that you believe in and you don't break and you're devoted to and dedicated to. So now that we have a pretty broad definition, it's pretty easy to define Bitcoin as a religion. So again, you don't have to be a fundamentalist religious Bitcoiner, but there is definitely, so obviously being a non-theistic religion, there's no heaven, there's no hell, you know, there's no punishment and everything's voluntary. So like, you know, here's the framework, like, you know, take it or leave it, take some of it, take most of it. Like it's free, it's voluntary, but there is definitely, you know, dead set rituals and beliefs to being a Bitcoiner. So the belief is baked into the code that it's censorship resistant, that it is inflation resistant. These are, you know, two of the greatest gifts possibly ever to humanity. The first time, you know, humanity, every human on earth has guaranteed property rights, you know, can't be seized. No one can stop you receiving. No one can stop you sending. So these are beliefs that are like, that are, you know, baked into the ethos of Bitcoin. You can't be a pro-censorship authoritarian yet also like Bitcoin. You know, some people like may be able to manage, you know, that level of cognitive dissonance, but there are particular ethical and moral philosophical principles baked into the code itself. So part of the nature of the code is, you know, censorship resistance. It's not we decided, you know, we're not going to, you know, censor Bitcoin. Bitcoin by nature is uncensorable.
Right.
So those are like, you know, sort of fundamental, you know, beliefs that are baked into the code and you accept when you run the code. And then, you know, we have rituals. Don't trust, verify, not your keys, not your coins, not your node, not your rules. So like, you know, they say the most religious of people, like, you know, you go to church or mosque or synagogue, you know, every week, you know, and there's some, you know, that don't. And the ones that don't, like, doesn't mean they're not, you know, Christians or Jews or Muslims. It just means they're probably just not as, you know, strict about it as others. And it's the same thing with Bitcoin. Like, you're not going to hell if you, you know, don't run a node. But if you're, you know, but if you align, like, with the principles of Bitcoin and, like, you know what's good, like, you'll run a node. And it'll be part of, like, you know, the life ritual that you're strict about with, you know, as specifically related to Bitcoin. Now, as you can see, you know, being an observer of social media and Bitcoin, Twitter and whatnot, the philosophy and the morals of Bitcoin are extremely far reaching and, you know, touch many other fields of life. One of my favorite examples of this is like the regenerative, you know, farming movement, you know, the philosophies of, you know, low time preference and, you know, and, you know, and, you know, long-term thinking, actual sustainability. But, you know, the underlying, you know, philosophy and religion of Bitcoin, like, is extremely, it's extremely simple. Censorship resistance, you know, we use a peer-to-peer network, you know, to keep everything honest, and you know, we use human nature to power it.
Yeah, I it's amazing. I think all the things you laid out there really, I hope to dive into all of them here, and I'd love to start with some of the religious characters in the Bitcoin space. Yes. So that we can kind of further define the people that we're going to run into through these parables and sort of these lessons and sort of comparisons. So I'd love to start with, you know, I mean, obviously there's Satoshi, but after Satoshi, there's the apostles and disciples. So maybe you could describe like what kind of group of people those were. And maybe if you can even, I don't know, name someone who might be an apostle or disciple.
So everybody loves a story. And like, I suppose like, you know, the ways that like, you know, traditional religions, you know, proliferated, you know, throughout the planet, you know, have a look at the reach of Christianity, have a look at the reach of Islam. Now, a lot of people, you know, criticize and say, you know, religion was, you know, spread by the sword. You know, that might be true in some cases, but religion really was spread by like the story.
Mm.
The all-in-one package, you know, as a story that religion provided, you know, to a person, you know, to the downtrodden or whatever. the story or the narrative, you know, is you know very important. I don't know, using the a petty example from TV, Game of Thrones, the very disappointing season finale, when they were trying to figure out a king, they're like, we need a king that has a story, because everybody needs a story. You can't follow something really, you know, unless there's like a bit of a story behind it. And every story needs its characters. And, you know, our story, which is, you know, still evolving and still being written, you know, also has its characters, which mirrors kind of, you know, religious figures and religious characters. So as you mentioned, you know, like, you know, we had the creator and the first of the believers in, you know, in Satoshi, you know, the second of the believers and first of the apostles would have been, you know, Hal Finney. You know, the earliest of devs who, you know, put their effectively, you know, careers and fortunes on the line, like, you know, like the, for example, the founding fathers of the US in signing their declaration, we hereby put our lives and fortunes on the line. The disciples, you know, came after them and are still, you know, floating, you know, floating among us. You know, several of the people, several of the apostles and the disciples there from the early days still are still, you know, actively, you know, contributing to CORE. So we are very, very young in our story. If you ask, you know, the religious, you know, we're 13 years into a 13 million year story.
Right. You mentioned this is a new story, Bitcoin. And is it just, you know, we also mentioned that it's not competing with other religions, but is it competing with other stories? And what stories might those be?
Yes, it is complete. It is competing with one main story, and that is like the story of like the legacy fiat proof of stake system. Mm. So one other thing baked into Bitcoin is that, you know, rewards should be proportionate to work. Everybody has the exact number of Satoshis they deserve in any point in time. What I have is exactly how much I deserve. What you have is exactly how many you deserve. And this is a beautiful ethos. Like this is a beautiful thing. Mm. You put the work in and, you know, the reward is there. You know, long-term thinking, all of the principles that are fundamentally baked into the code are baked in effectively to counter the very famous story with the headline, you know, Chancellor on the Brink.
What do you say to people who say, well, yeah, everyone had a fair chance or gets it at the price they deserve or has the amount they deserve. But maybe some people say, well, you heard about the story before me. You know, where I didn't understand the story, is it doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, I know, but nothing really is fair, because even you can go all the way back to Hal Finney and say, you know, why should I use Bitcoin? Like, I should have come up with this. That's unfair. So it is what it is, but like the beneficial thing, or the thing that is understood by all Bitcoiners, but for some reason just isn't communicated because we take it for granted. Let's say I'm an evil early adopting Bitcoin whale and I have 1 million coins, just like Satoshi. And I decide to cause havoc by dumping these 1 million coins. What's the conclusion of that story? I now have 0 coins and I'm never, ever, ever getting any back unless I work for them. My friends can't print them out and give them to me for free, like in the old system. Like, that's it. So like, you might get like be an early mover in terms of like getting a chance to stack, but you have no advantage over anyone else in that you can only spend once. And if you want to top up your stack, you've got to go out and work like the rest of us.
Right.
And, you know, and in every religion, they say hard work is good for the soul. Hard work is an important thing in life. And a lot of people know the taste of hard work in the fiat world. And it's certainly not the masters.
Right. So who were the fundamentalists?
The fundamentalists, I'd like to think I'm a fundamentalist, but I don't go anywhere near far enough. I don't think I'd be more of a preacher. A fundamentalist are like are the people like on the absolute bleeding edge of the front. So here's a couple of people I'd call fundies, and they'd be absolutely proud of being called fundies. I'd say like Alex Svetsky is a good example of a fundy. Francis Pouliot, fantastic example of a fundy. Max Hillebrand, fantastic example of, and by what I mean by fundamentalist, isn't the derogatory term you hear about, you know, like terrorists and whatnot. Fundamentalists are people living the fundamentals of Bitcoin. So you've very recently interviewed Max. Mm. No fiat at all. So I still like work and earn fiat. I convert some of it to Bitcoin, but I still have a bank account. I still have all that. There is no way I can call myself a fundamentalist and be honest with myself when you have people like Max, Francis, Alex, and many, many others. These are just, you know, three friends that come like to the top of mind. Like these are people that are living in the parallel system, waiting for us to come and join them.
Right. Completely there.
And live the fundamentals of Bitcoin, like to the best of their abilities.
Right. And what about true believers?
The true believers, so I consider myself a true believer. The true believers will believe anything. We love the memes. We love the frameworks. But most of all, we love Bitcoin. And like we love what Bitcoin can do and like what Satoshi has given us. And we are mindless and single-minded in our love and belief in Bitcoin. And we live the strict religious principles. And one of the religious principles of the true believer is the concept of the tithe. So all of the major Abrahamic religions had a mandate for charity. So Christianity and Judaism had the tithe, or the tenth of your income. Islam had a combination of 2.5% of your wealth every year. And then depending on, you know, the particular nature of business you ran, between 5 and 20%, you know, of that income. The Sikhs had a 1/10 tithe. But basically, God is almighty and all-powerful and all-doing and all-knowing. But the church does realistically on earth need some money to keep going. So it's on the believers to, you know, kick in, you know, and keep the church going. That has largely, you know, fallen by the wayside. You know, most religious practices, religious practitioners, except, you know, the most dedicated of ones. But the concept is like, you know, charity is important, and you know, we think it's so important. It's you know, we're mandating it and making it obligatory. So obviously, you know, I'm a big believer in voluntarism. But if you do love Bitcoin and you do believe in it, tithing to Bitcoin is a very unique thing. So what is tithing to Bitcoin? So if you're religious, so I know like, you know, so if you're religious, so for example, the Mormons are still very strict on the tithe. So let's say you're a Mormon and you give 10% of your wage every week to the church. And this enables the church to build, you know, new churches, you know, print pamphlets, pay people, whatever. Do the work of God on earth. So this money is leaving your pocket and going like to someone else's pocket. With donating to Bitcoin, you're not donating to anyone. The simple act of buying Bitcoin is charity. Every time like you take Bitcoin off the market into cold hands, you know, for, you know, with a 3 to 5 year time horizon, you're stabilizing the price of Bitcoin and making it useful for people in El Salvador. Mm. What better charity has ever been conceived in the history of man? Simply by you buying Bitcoin every day, you can stabilize the price of a currency that can allow, you know, the extreme poor and unbanked to bootstrap an economy. So for me, Bitcoin isn't, you know, just, you know, tech and whatnot. It's the greatest charitable movement in human history, and it's the greatest infrastructure project in human history. So you mentioned earlier that I was a retired civil engineer. It's funny, I'm only 35. So a bit young to be retired, but it's true. So I've been involved in a lot of infrastructure in my time. So I've had my hand in the design, construction, operation, and maintenance of maybe $30 billion worth of big civil infrastructure. I started uni very young at 16, knowing I wanted to be a civil engineer from the age of 12, because basically I said, if you build roads and water treatment and wells and, civil infrastructure for the people, give the people something to build on top of, and, it'll be, a truly beautiful world. And I was obsessed with civil engineering and the impact it had. And then I met Bitcoin, and I'm like, civil engineering is completely irrelevant compared to Bitcoin. So I spent a lot of time, you'll see in the background, years and years and years and years in university and industry, plying my trade as a civil engineer, one of the youngest ever chartered engineers in Australia. None of it's important compared to Bitcoin. Nothing. I would rather be known as a religious idiot about Bitcoin than as a civil engineer. Because even though I've built a desalination plant, railroads, highways, compared to Bitcoin, this is nothing. There is nothing anyone in life can do that is more important than Bitcoin. For me, it's a matter of life and death. So you want to fix global warming? You need Bitcoin. If you want to fix anything, you need Bitcoin. The other story is not working. The fiat story of everything's going to be fine and inflation is great and we've always been at war with East Asia. It's not working anymore. It's time for a new story. And I highly encourage people like me, that have had success in legacy industries. That industry might feel important, but it is not important. The only thing that is important right now is Bitcoin and ASAP. So a lot of people, so I said Bitcoin is a new story, but it's old. There's a billion people alive on planet Earth that do not know life without Bitcoin. So it's old enough. The enemies are at the gate and increasing by the day. If we don't get strong quick, there may be a chance to overwhelm us.
Right. I think in terms of how you described your leaving engineering to focus more on Bitcoin is what it seems like is as an epiphany, and as a real definition of a true believer. I wonder if that was an epiphany at the same time of, Bitcoin is important and more important than other things, or was it more gradual than that for you? And I kind of want to buttress that with the question of, do you see Bitcoin as just an emergent engineering or re-engineering of the world's monetary system? And is that why it's more important to you?
Infrastructure, there's two types of main infrastructure in civil infrastructure engineering terms. You've got economic infrastructure and social infrastructure. Social infrastructure, health, schools, justice system, yada, yada, yada. But economic infrastructure, roads, ports, bridges, rail, the stuff that traditionally enables an economy. Mm. What's the most economic, important economic infrastructure to you, young Cedric?
Money.
It has to be Bitcoin. It has to be money.
Right. And in that regard, Bitcoin's an old story.
It's nice to build a port,
Right.
Even if it's Dubai ports or whatever it is, a huge port, a legacy, what is, in the scheme of global everything commerce, Dubai port, if that closed down, that would, ruin a little bit of commerce in the short term. But in the scheme of things, most things we do in life are irrelevant compared to Bitcoin.
Right. How does one really grapple or grasp that? It's very, not only is it humbling, stack stats and stay humble, but you know, where do we find meaning if we're not developers or miners? And hodling and running a full node does not take up our whole day.
Bitcoin can still take up your whole day without it taking up its whole day. So I've left. So my soul has left civil engineering, but my body hasn't. So I turn that fiat into Bitcoin every day. And I believe and I hope and like I will be raptured. My body will one day be raptured with my soul into the Bitcoin ecosystem. And there's a much higher chance of me being raptured into a Bitcoin job with Bitcoin at $1 million a pop than it is at Bitcoin at 30 grand a pop.
Right.
But by me buying every day, there's enough like single-minded apes like myself just buying every day, you get to $1 million a coin very, very quickly.
Yeah. And I hope to touch on the economics of that a little bit. Well, what are the hodlers?
So the hodlers hodl and they never let go. And this is a good thing. But that's all they do. So one of my most hated hodlers is the guy, you know, that bought in 2011 and that's it. He's hodling. Has never done anything else for Bitcoin other than hodled. Now people say, yeah, like, you know, he hodled and, you know, didn't introduce sell pressure and that's all good. But in 2011, there was only 12 million Bitcoin. And, you know, the inflation, yeah. And in 2011, would there have even been 12 million by 2011? Maybe 7 million. So the first 50% of all Bitcoin were done by the first halving. Then the second 25, then 12 and a half. And so, yeah, there would have been 10 and a half. So in 2011, there probably would have only been 5 million Bitcoin or so, two years in. So the market has had to since absorb, you know, 13 and a half million Bitcoins. So if you're not like continually helping to absorb the inflation, like don't pat yourself on the back too much for hodling. Like, you know, thanks for hodling, I suppose. But like you're basically just waiting for us to absorb the rest of the inflation. The hodler will be useful once we're at 21 million. If you're just hodling and not buying, you're not really being that useful. Because that's the thing. So here's the thing. So you've accepted the philosophy of Bitcoin. You've accepted everything about Bitcoin. You're earning fiat. You've bought Bitcoin 8 years ago. You've been earning fiat for the past 8 years. What has stopped you from putting more fiat into Bitcoin? Other than the, you know, egotistical saying that, you know, I bought Bitcoin when it was at 20 cents.
Right, right. Yeah. And yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. That's why I'm not going to. So I'm kind of curious who the preachers are.
The preachers are people like me, like you. Preacher isn't a nice word because it has negative connotations, unfortunately, but really the preacher is the person who is gives themselves and their time to teach and tell the story. And the storytellers, you know, the coders might not agree with me here. The storytellers are as important as the coders because the code is a story most people will never be able to understand.
Right. How do true believers gain comfort or faith in Bitcoin Core, the code, if they're not technical minded or they don't know how to read code?
The true believer need only read the abstract of the white paper, like for the belief. Yes, don't trust verify, but like some things. You know, like human, like decentralized human economic incentives. So basically for me, I can't read the code. I've never verified Bitcoin, but I know enough about, you know, specialization and social cooperation to know that, you know, 100,000 greedy people have reviewed this to make sure that they don't get robbed.
Right.
And like, I'm okay with that. And like, there's some storytellers I really, really do trust. you know, through social bonds, who have read it and, you know, are teaching me and guiding me. And with them, you know, I trust them, knowing the shortcomings of what trust can be. But we can all trust Bitcoin to always work, because humans are greedy and will never change.
Right. And what about the sufferers amongst us?
Oh, the poor sufferers. I used to be a sufferer as well. So the sufferer, unfortunately, usually, you know, is a top buyer and then subsequent dip buyer. So at one point, I always tell the people I bought 18 consecutive dips and was down 84%. So buying the dip doesn't work. But the difference in the sufferers back then and the sufferers now is that the sufferers most definitely have a support network of preachers, of true believers, of hodlers, of people who can just smack some sense into them and say, listen, you've made a mistake. All right. You lump summed in at the wrong moment. You can't change it. Nothing's going to change it. You're never getting your money back. You're never going to get more Bitcoin. You have to like sort of submit. So I'll go back to submission, very, very shortly, but you've just got to submit. And if you accept Bitcoin and you believe in Bitcoin, that's it. Pony up money every day, starting today. And like before you know it, like you'll be sweet. So in the article you're referring to that I wrote about these characters, the sufferers, it was in November 2018. I said, sufferers, I promise you salvation. I promise you $10 a day. I promise you, you will be a whole coiner. So you visit dcabtc.com, you plug in that day at the start date, you do $10 a day and let me know what you come back with. It is more than one BTC.
Right. Yeah. And definitely in that article, you lay that out, whether you invest X amount in this year, X amount in that year, and you walk through it and what the returns are like and where people line up on even, you know, belief and sort of the leap of faith. And the greater the returns are for the amount of faith one takes, just like in sort of any endeavor or project or even religion.
In an unrelated thing, I've written another framework is called Bitcoin as a startup. Mm-hmm. And I've like defined Bitcoin as a startup company, like currently evolving. We're in currently like block reward era 4. So we've already gone through like angel, pre-seed, seed, series A, and like now we're in series B. And basically the people that were involved in the different series were sweat equity workers. Some decided to like stay on and work their sweat and like become even wealthier. The majority sold. Like that's the truth. Right. Either lost them or sold them. And the true sweat equity workers like stuck around and sweat. And I'm happy to be like that VC that's pumping in daily money so that the price stays stable so they don't have to keep selling their coins. Right. But this is basically how a venture works. You got your different fundraisers, different people become wealthier at different parts, you know, of the evolution. There's no sneaky business with the VCs diluting early shareholders and all of that. There's no reprints with Bitcoin. If you spend it, it's gone forever and you have to work to get it back. But back to submission and submission to the will of Bitcoin and why it's critical. So two of the biggest religions in the world by population would be Islam and Taoism. So I'd say, you know, combined following of almost 2 billion. And the underpinning message, the true underpinning message of both religions, and actually the name Islam itself, Islam means submission. So the whole point is submission to the will of God and his rules. And we promise you, you'll be happy and you have heaven. Taoism is identical, but it's submission to the will of nature. You play nice with nature, you harness nature, you don't do acts against nature, you'll be very happy. You just submit to nature and accept nature, accept death, accept life, and, you know, and you'll be happy. So and there are some things about Bitcoin you will just have to submit to and accept, such as buying tops, buying lows. Bitcoin is what Bitcoin is. It is a powerful force. Do not stand in front of it. We have seen a couple of people try stand in front of it, both internal and external. It's not something you want to do. What you want to do is submit. Victory is guaranteed and promised. It can either happen quick or it can happen slow. But the genie's out of the bottle and Bitcoin has won. Life will be very easy if we have a quick win with low attrition. But victory has been assured. Bitcoin has won. People just have to cotton on. But for the true believer and especially the sufferer, submission to Bitcoin is the first step, to having the friar tag, in front of your name. And most of the time, you can't get to this point without suffering.
Right. It's really interesting how, Taoism come up a lot. One of my favorite books is The Tao of Pooh.
I love it.
It's a fantastic book.
I got Gigi to read that.
It's one of the best. And it you learn a lot about nature and submission to nature, but happenstance and randomness. And really also just kind of not bending to nature's will, but learning how you can get more out of following the way of nature. Whether it's, the tree, or you can sit under the shade of the tree for, generations versus cutting down the tree and maybe making a chair and table and maybe that lasts 8-10 years or whatever it is. And I also want to go back to when we brought up how your article, Bitcoin is a Startup, and just contrast that with the real venture capitalist world and, sort of the shitcoin waterfall there, where within credit investors and the legacy system where you can't take leap of faith or leaps of faith in certain ventures unless you have certain amount of capital and can get through different rules and regulations. So I think in that regard, Bitcoin's a lot more fair. And I kind of want to turn to the passion of the believers.
Yes.
And I want to start off by, reading back a little bit of the top of the article that you wrote. As always, we commence by sending thanks and good tidings to Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator and first of the believers, general of the Byzantines, breaker of the banks and fighter of the fiat, and to Hal Finney and the apostles and the disciples thereafter, and to the stoic and patient true believers who keep their tithe holy and stack sats for their salvation. O you who believe, fear the day of economic reckoning and do not face the angel of hyper-Bitcoinization as a no-coiner, for punishment awaits them in the hereafter. So what exactly is Judgment Day or the hereafter for Bitcoiners?
So Judgment Day happened 3 months exactly after that article was written. March 20, 2020.
Mm.
So when the Fed Reserve rate went to 0%, we are now in the economic hereafter. I didn't think it was going to come this quickly. But that day may very well go down when we look back at all of history. That day may go down as, Judgment Day, or the day of the economic hereafter. Like, it doesn't all necessarily have to change, immediately all on day one. But everyone has seen what has happened, since that time. So just,
right.
So this article was published December 20, 2019. Yeah, actually, probably only days before we started hearing about what COVID was coming out of China. I had certainly not heard of what COVID was, I think, at that point. And that's what it is. So basically, for me, the economic judgment day in hereafter is when money printing has just gone off the leash. And for the little guy now, realistically, it's basically every man for himself at the moment.
Well, it's very interesting that you bring up that time, because that's also a time of great suffering for Bitcoiners. And all markets really crashed hard that day, which in hindsight was a great opportunity for sufferers and all Bitcoiners and all newcomers alike. So that's kind of interesting what was born out of the world, I think, changed that day economically and socially and culturally forever. I do believe. And that's kind of interesting. So then what is hyper-Bitcoinization to the true believer?
Effectively, it's the death of fiat. So on March the 20th, the throat was slit. But this body has a lot of blood in it, so who knows how long it'll take to bleed out. But I think that's it. That's the death knell. I'm not going to sit and try to like summarize the entire, you know, macro landscape. There's several others that have done that to death and far better than I ever could, but that's it. There is no coming back. Interest rates can never, ever go up again. The money printing is never going to stop. The body is still warm. It's twitching. The neck's, you know, wide open. There's a pool of blood, but you know, how much blood, you know, is left. There's no patching. There's no patching this one up. Sounds alarmist, conspiracy theory, you know, yada, yada, yada. But it is what it is. Like the numbers are there for all to see. Like the honest truth is that the numbers that we are seeing are probably rosy versions of like correct actual numbers. The inflation farce is a perfect example. So there's no way inflation was only 5.3%.
Right. Do you think that in regards to Bitcoin as a story and a narrative, and that there's a competing story and a narrative, do you think that adherence, whether they're willing and voluntary adherence or not, do you think that there are apostles and disciples and true believers of the fiat story?
Yes, absolutely. And in greater quantity than us, but I'm not sure if they're true believers or if they're just, you know, incentive driven. So right. The banking and finance sector employs 61 million people plus, you know, 120 million, you know, support industries, you know, for cleaning and procurement and all that kind of stuff. You know, Bitcoin is on net positive sum, but there are going to be a lot of losers that come out of, you know, not adopting Bitcoin.
Yeah. From your, you know, sort of engineering background and mindset, if you were in charge of some of these huge systems, whether it's, you know, transportation for a country or monetary policy for a nation, how do you approach that from an engineering background? Do you think that's even possible? Do you think that they do have the ability to kind of manage these things as best they can, or it's kind of a little bit more narrative management and they're hoping for the best?
Look, from an engineering point of view, the biggest the biggest tool in the civil engineering toolbox, like in 2021, wait for it, is the Lightning Network. So, for example, who will build my roads, Cedric? I'll build the roads. That's fine, but roads don't need to be built.
Well,
Sydney Road Network. No, I'll give you an example Bitcoin infrastructure. So in the Sydney Road Network, we've got hundreds of, we've got tens of thousands of kilometers of road. And during the morning and evening peaks, we have 4% road asset utilization. So only 4% of the roads are used at any one time, the major arterials. You get every car on the road talking to each other, paying each other in Satoshis, giving each other the heads up for the best road to use at the best time. You could lower speed limits, increase asset utilization, lower maintenance costs on roads because only trucks damage roads. You charge trucks extra. There's so many things you can do when you can mix micropayments in with infrastructure, with physical infrastructure. The story is not getting out, even though like smart roads have been, you know, something, you know, that's been theorized about for a long time. You know, I don't think any of them have incorporated things like, you know, the Lightning network into it. So infrastructure is best managed by the crowd, actually. You know, things like Lightning will even enable the ugliest, oldest, you know, bits of infrastructure to, you know, be pushed into the new age.
Yeah, I really like how you answered that question, because you flipped it and you took the person out of it. And I agree, it should be, these problems should be solved in the manner that you're speaking to. Do you think Bitcoin is learning about us, amassing all this knowledge and kind of incrementally developing some sort of mindset about us, or way to read us or push us?
I think it had us figured out from day one. We're stupid, selfish, greedy people. The more the merrier, and it'll work. Like the incentives were there on day one. If the incentive structure wasn't perfect on day one, so that's another like religious thing. So like obviously Bitcoin's not perfect. You know, only the fundamentalists would say it's 100% perfect, but like it's probably the closest thing like to perfect you'll ever get. And the perfection is, you know, that it, the perfection in Bitcoin is that it isn't perfect, but it works perfectly.
Right.
Incentives were figured out correctly and baked into the code. So all these nice little things we get, like SegWit and Taproot, like it doesn't change the philosophy of Bitcoin, like all the incentives. These are just nice, cool, you know, tech things to have, which will allow us to even, you know, further drive, you know, our philosophy and way of thinking.
Right. So also quote, a quote that you referenced in your piece from Lao Tzu. One of great virtue is one who follows the natural way of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is vague and intangible, yet in the vague and void, there is image, there is substance. Within the profound and tangible, there is essence. This essence is genuine. In it lies the great faith. Since the beginning of 2009, Bitcoin has been in existence. Only through it can one understand the origin of all beings. How do I know that this is the true essence? It is through this natural way. The Tao of the Coin, chapter 21. I'm kind of curious what you think the observancy is mankind's fall from grace, and is it similar to the Christian concept of the original sin, or Islam with clean slates and or reversion?
I like the clean slate, and Bitcoin. Bitcoin offers you a clean slate with every address you generate. You're not judged on your past, or you know, you can avoid being. So let's say, you know, I'm a crook of some sort. I don't know. I've been unfairly punished by the system, like, and I've got a record, and people won't take money from me.
Right.
And like nothing I can do to like clean my slate. You know, Bitcoin offers you a clean slate every time you press generate address. So that's, you know, that's the way, you know, I try to think of it. I don't like, you know, punishing people for things they weren't responsible for. But with Bitcoin, you know, there are ways, you know, it gives everybody, for better or worse, a clean slate.
Yeah, I like that.
About Bitcoin, it's for better or worse. If there's a benefit that, you know, accrues to you, that benefit, unfortunately, will also accrue to pedophiles. But like, like it is what it is. You know, these benefits either have to accrue to everyone or they have to accrue to nobody.
Right.
You know, fairness is the natural way. Nature is extremely fair in its indiscriminate destruction. Nature might not be fair per se, but it is certainly indiscriminate.
Right. Same
thing about Bitcoin.
Yeah, I really like what you're saying about the clean slate. I think the analogy there that I draw is, you know, someone could say, I'm going to give this up forever. I don't know, maybe they smoke cigarettes and they're like, I'm never going to smoke cigarettes again. And then tomorrow they wake up and then they smoke some cigarettes. And they weren't necessarily lying when they made that proclamation. Then the next day, they started a new slate and they made another mistake. But then the day after, they still have the chance to continue on with the proclamation. And it's kind of like that with anything. But my point there is that, you know, kind of every day is a new day and that you always have a chance to be who you want. And your new actions in a lot of ways define yourself. And I see what you're saying there. I'm kind of curious. Yeah.
So that's another like famous Bitcoin saying, like the best time to buy Bitcoin like was yesterday, second best time today.
Right. And yeah, so that's kind of interesting. And I bring that up now with just DCA. You know, like I have a few small DCA set up. So maybe three times a week. And then those other days I like to buy, if I can, small amounts, whatever I can afford. Are there rules to this? Should it be every day? Should it be once a week? If you just buy once a week without a set plan, is that still DCA?
Because it's totally voluntary, Satoshi only asks of what you are able. There's no compulsion in any of this. But statistically speaking, you know, if 10 million people are doing this, it doesn't even matter if it's once a month. You'll basically be hitting a buy at like every minute of the day somewhere in the world. So it doesn't really matter like too much. But the reason, the sufferers love DCA so much is because and especially the long sufferers is because they've had a chance to try go head to head with DCA and like compare performance over a long time. And like, you're almost never ever able to beat it because human psychology. So my big buys were at, 1200 a coin, my first initial big buys all those years ago, then, buy the dip at 900. Yep, buy the dip at 800, buy the dip at 700, buy the dip at 600, buy the dip at 500, buy the dip at 400, buy the dip at 300. Then it goes to 200 and you say, you know what? You know, maybe I'll wait till it's $50 and I'll buy. And then next week it's 300 and you're like, all right, maybe when it goes back to 200, I'll buy. Then the next week it's 400. And then 600 and then 800, and then you buy at 800, and then 2 weeks later, it's back at 300. It was a fake out, and it happens all the time, all the time. And you can go back and have a look through the price history. It looks very insignificant in linear scale, but in log, you can see the rips and dips. So the all-time high in 2013 was on December 14th, 2013, $1,170 on Bitfinex. This price was passed for the last time on April the 14th, 2017, 3 years and 4 months. Capital annual growth rate, zero.
Right.
But if you bought every single day between December 2013 and April 2017, you have something like 7 or 8 Bitcoin.
Right.
For me, I didn't buy a single coin in 2015. I was faked out the whole time, terrified. There were no preachers. There were no sufferers. There was no support community. I just said, I have what I have, and I've just got to accept what I have. And, you know, if it'll most likely go to zero now at this point. But I can tell everyone with confidence, if Bitcoin could survive 2014, 2015, right. We are stuck with Bitcoin. Unfortunately for you, Mr. Klaus Schwab, you are stuck.
Mm-hmm.
That was the time to get rid of Bitcoin, and they missed their chance.
That's interesting too. Ye of little faith back in 2014 or 2015, yep. As you mentioned, and how much, the faithful were more rewarded. And it's very interesting though, going through something like that. And just in general, I think it's very psychological, this tithing, this DCA. You know, I mentioned that, I almost, and again, it's what I can give, you know, I have a family, you know, but, you know, I like to give every day a little bit. And there are people on Twitter where they'll say, I stacked twice today. And it's so interesting. And it's like, I kind of think, like, why didn't you just do once double the amount? And it's so interesting that given that take. And I wonder in that respect, are we cleansing ourselves from fiat?
Like you can think of it that way. For me, I'm just like, I'm migrating. Like I'm just migrating. So obviously when you've been in like Bitcoin, you know, long enough, like most of you're already all in.
Mm.
So right. Like, and I have so little faith in fiat, you know, I'm not, you know, I haven't reached the point where I'm completely independent and can like, you know, retire completely. But while I'm still earning fiat, what am I going to do with fiat?
Right.
Just leave it in the bank. Like, yeah, leave 3 months of like expenses or something, whatever. Like, I know the fundies will even disagree with that, but like, you know, leave a bit of like cash. And like, then what? Like, what do I do with the rest? So for me, like I've got a pretty big budget. So like, I tithe 20% of gross. So 20% of like my pre-tax income, like goes to Bitcoin. And I find that, after all of my other expenses, after tax, the main expense. So it's closer to probably like 35% to 40% of my net. And then the rest of my money literally just pays my like my regular bills, petrol for the car, insurance, like, you know, living life, rent. And I just keep like, make sure I have like, you know, 2-3 months of cash for emergencies. I'm lucky to not have kids or a family, so I can be like, you know, cavalier with these kinds of things. But for me, there's no share I would buy. There's nothing. So it's just very easy for me to just apportion a percent of like my salary, which I can commit to and like not have to think about. And like once every like, again, the fundies are going to hate me saying this, but every time like I have a decent amount of Bitcoin worth paying a withdrawal fee for, I withdraw, which is like, you know, once every like 2 months.
Mm.
You know, I just, but like, you know, everyone's going to have like their different way of doing things. But like, I do not like think about buying Bitcoin, about buying dips, nothing. I've just got everything on automatic pull. I get paid, the money goes, to the exchange.
it's very interesting. I'm thinking about this suffering and the way to view it there. And we can contemplate, you know, but in some regard, you know, any person who's foregoing consumption now is going through a form of suffering. And especially if Bitcoin were to go to zero, which I don't believe would ever happen, but then you would suffer the loss of it. And I think that's where we've been talking a lot about is, you know, sufferers of, they bought at the top and they've had to go through a long period of suffering until, you know, the value comes back. But there's also, I think what's really hard for people who don't understand this story yet or are new to the story is the suffering in the present that is not necessarily taking a loss, but foregoing something. Because you said, what am I going to do? I'm not going to hold fiat. And I think a lot of people intuitively know that. And so they're either going to, most people are going to consume up to a certain amount, maybe the most they can. And you know, there are other religious parables where whatever level you're at, that's where you should be. And so any, you know, if you are spending 100% of your money and now you're like, I want to put 20% into Bitcoin, well, you're going to have to suffer 20% of consumption to get there. And it's not necessarily even suffering in price appreciation or exchange rate to the dollar. It's suffering of, I used to get these other things and now I'm going to go without. Even if those things are garbage or bullshit to you and me or to them at some point, they're going to have to give up something now. And it's really hard in a fiat, the fiat machine, because, you know, it's a Red Queen's race. So if you're spending 100% of your money and then your money's worth less and you're not getting a raise in fiat as much as maybe, you know, it's just, it's brutal. Can you describe maybe like what a little bit more about what that fiat machine is like and what maybe it does to people's souls who are outside of the Bitcoin narrative?
Yeah, so I'll relay this back to suffering. And the prime reason I suffered. So like my suffering wasn't price related. It was more sort of a mix of both worldview and ego related.
Mm.
So, you know, I used to fancy myself as a smart man before meeting Bitcoin, no longer. But like the mockery, the round mockery I faced nonstop for 3 years about Bitcoin from 2013 to 2016, like that was the, like that was suffering. And also the worldview of, so I remember like the sheer, like the terror of like watching Bitcoin's price go up while I was trying to buy it for the first time. So I discovered it overseas in July 2013. And I said, stick, as soon as I get back to Sydney in October, I'm getting in on Bitcoin. And like, it was going up like 10% a day when I arrived. And like, when I picked it up at $1,000 a pop, I said, thank God I picked it up for $1,000 each. This is going to be $100,000 next week. Like the market cap of Bitcoin now is only 10 billion. Snapchat is 50. So Bitcoin is easily going to be worth 50, like as soon as people like, you know, start realizing this. And then, you know, for the next 3 years, I was like, you know, going over in my head, like how can Bitcoin only be worth 5% of Snapchat to society? Like, was I this stupid and this wrong? So that was a hard thing. Having your system of, having like your system of beliefs challenged, like I believe in freedom. I believe in censorship resistant. Like, why doesn't anyone else believe in this? You know, people tell me, you know, a lot of people do. And I say, well, no, that's wrong because, you know, Bitcoin's only $300 each. If people actually believed in all of that, it'd be $3 million each. Like you can, if you believe in censorship resistance, there is somewhere in the world you can put your money where your mouth is and support that cause. And all it requires is buying and holding Bitcoin.
Right.
And when Bitcoin was worthless, that meant that nobody agreed with my worldview. I was alone pretty much, you know, it was an isolating feeling. Like, I proudly say the years of 2013 to 2017 were the worst years of my life. Even though those were the years, like I learned most, about Bitcoin, it was a terrible time. Like, our fellow Bitcoiners, we did not, do anything really to try to support, the Bitcoin price. And, you know, you can see that with meme stocks like GameStop and AMC and all that. They've, you know, liquidated multi-decker billion-dollar hedge funds just by being apes and buying every day. What do you think Bitcoiners can do?
Yeah, a lot of parallels there. My story is a little later than yours. Bitcoin was going up 10% a day when I kind of came to the realization I wanted to buy my first stack of Satoshis. And I remember price running away from me as my wire transfer was trying to go from the legacy system over to, you know, shitty Coinbase. And, you know, what kind of effed with my head there, just really fucked me up, was Bitcoin ran so much that I couldn't get as much. And I started looking at the shitcoins there and thinking, well, if I can't get this much of Bitcoin, well, you know, then I might as well get these other things. And that was a form of suffering and or misguidedness. And then very quickly, you know, going into a bear market, I was lucky. There was a lot more education. It wasn't as good as now, but there was a lot more education. And I found conviction then. And for me, the suffering was sort of very bittersweet because I realized I found truth and I found something that I could be moored to. And I had an opportunity at hand.
But imagine though that the price didn't run away from you and you got a 5X, you probably would have sold and you wouldn't have ever found anything. And I think it's suffering.
I did experience a run up at first. where,
okay,
all right, you know, it did do well before it didn't do well. So yeah, I mean, this was October, November of 2017. So I got to experience November and December and 3x from, or two, yep, 2.5x from my entry point. But, you know, and that was confusing because the other things that I did buy on Coinbase went up more, like Litecoin and Ethereum. So now you think you're super smart. You think you're even smarter on those things. And from the legacy system, you're thinking about diversification and portfolio management is very silly. But very quickly, all that hubris is destroyed. And now you have to find real conviction because you don't have the short-term headwinds and success that you could brag about. And you still want to tithe and DCA and go in. And my closest loved ones, my wife was like, how are you going to throw more money at this thing that goes down in our other denomination of money? And at that point, you have to see, well, you have to figure out that it's a value proposition. And whatever other convictions that we've been talking about tonight in terms of, well, what it can do for the world and what it can do for humanity beyond just price appreciation. But
the thing is, it only goes down until it doesn't.
Well, I mean, but to people who don't believe, you can only show that to them after it's gone back up. And so the opportunity, you know, because I looked back to other opportunities of my youth where maybe I said, oh, that's a great idea and that's going to do really well. It didn't necessarily mean that I became an adherent or submitted to it or suffered for it and bought some of it, whether it was Apple stock or anything else. And so you could be like, yeah, I knew Facebook was going to do 100x. Yeah, are you part owner? Do you have some Facebook now? So, you know, and I think in a lot of ways, Bitcoin, not a lot of ways, in every way, Bitcoin was the asymmetric bet I've been looking for my whole life. And so it wasn't just, and beyond. And then once I learned about that, then it became the truth I was looking for my whole life, or a way to verify truth. I'm looking for truth in everything, but it's really hard to find truth in a lot of things or to verify truth. And truth in money is a really great thing for so many reasons beyond just price appreciation. So I found hope, you know, as a lot of Bitcoiners do. And I found hope during that time because I found conviction during the bear market. You know, maybe ultra orthodox conviction, if you will. You know, went from hodler or casual churchgoer to, you know, ultra orthodox conviction. Right. So, in that regard, is Satoshi a messenger or a prophet or savior or neither?
It's hard. So for me, I call him the first of the believers. So, I don't know if there's like a consensus around this. There probably never will be, but I like the phrase that Bitcoin was discovered, mm-hmm, rather than invented, and like I'd call him like, it's almost like, you know, it was the divine message brought down to his brain, and like he typed it out, and he was the first to believe in it and run it. So for me, he's a savior. Yeah, absolutely. He brought us like this really simple solution.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
You know, to the Byzantine general's problem, and he was the first person to believe in it and say, you know what, this can be something. I'll be running it. Who's with me? And you know, the second person is always, you know, just as important as the first. So for Hal Finney, you know, I say, you know, apostle, and you know, second of the believers.
Do you think it's possible Hal and Satoshi are the same person?
Yes, anything's possible. Either way, I'm like, you know, the other suspect, if that's even like a correct term, Len Sassaman. So I'm satisfied that, you know, Satoshi is dead.
Mm.
Whether that's Hal or whether that's Len.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Satoshi's coming back.
I'm not familiar with Len, to be honest. Hal, I find it I'm just very inspired by how I find the connections unreal. I do find the tidbit that that his brain is frozen to just be astonishing in and of itself when I learned about that. And so I really have my questions there. I don't think it necessarily matters in any way. And I hope we don't find answers, but it's really, you know, fun puzzle to noodle about for some time. Does Bitcoin have struggles? And if so, are the struggles internal? Well, actually, does Bitcoin have struggles?
Bitcoiners have struggles. Bitcoin unaffected.
Right. And what are the Bitcoiners' struggles? The believers, what are the struggles for the believers in Bitcoin?
Mainly, getting the story out there. So basically, you can imagine the world is a bunch of, 14-year-old, boys or 16-year-old boys. We're trying to literally give them Mises to read. And the fiat world is giving them hardcore pornos.
Right.
What do you think they're going to take?
Right.
So that's our struggle. It's how to get a high time preference world to consider, low time preference. And also the principles, the past year hasn't just been a year and a half rather hasn't just been an economic change. It's been a social change. It's, do people actually want freedom?
Mm. What if they don't?
I know there was a poll of the English, certain questions, for how much longer do you want people to wear masks on buses? Another month, another 6 months, forever. And the amount of people that wanted forever was ridiculous. So that's the struggle of the Bitcoiner. Maybe spreading his story and growing his flock and riding out, another 12 years until there's no more inflation.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting journey for each and every Bitcoiner. And I think there's going to be a lot of individual decisions. And I think that, on the macro sense, Bitcoin's going to win and Bitcoiners are going to win. But, in every story, there's, I don't want to say casualties along the way, but there's ups and downs. And you mentioned it because, I don't think Bitcoin in itself frees us from every physical bondage in the short term, maybe. And maybe some people aren't experiencing physical bondage or whatever that infers, but even just the bondage of fiat for some, it's going to require, I think in Australia, things are a little bit more restricted right now in England and France and Greece. And my heart goes out to our Bitcoiner, brothers and sisters who are dealing with things that are much harder than I might be going through right now. One of the, not getting into all maybe the seven deadly sins, in terms of religion but one I kind of want to get into is, wrath and whether that's ever encouraged or permissible.
Yes, permissible. So against shitcoiners, wrath definitely allowed. Against the ESG eco-terrorists, wrath definitely allowed. But, try to be nice. No rules surrounding wrath with me, at least.
You mentioned eco-terrorists and eco-terrorism, I guess. You've recently written a lot of pieces about Bitcoin and the environment. So what do you mean by eco-terrorists and its relation to Bitcoin?
So an eco, it is what it is, terrorism, but using the environment as, the fear source to bludgeon, people, over the head, using, regulatory violence instead of, physical violence. But I have a summarizing phrase, for the eco-terrorists is that they don't actually care about energy. They care about power. So Bitcoin is great for the environment. Bitcoin is sustainable. Bitcoin is great for governance. Bitcoin is great for society. And like, if you're an ESG person and you're not a Bitcoiner, you're not a serious person.
But I kind of want to talk a little bit about, you know, Bitcoin is energy. And when the price of Bitcoin goes up, there's sort of an energy level that goes up. And what does that energy level represent in the world and in regards to what we're trying to accomplish?
So for me, I view Bitcoin as, you know, the, like, people hate talking about price. I don't know why. It doesn't make you like a bandwagoning you know, Bitcoiner if you talk about price. Price really is the only thing that matters. The price is the story to like the vast majority of people. So it's the only thing matters, and it's your only gauge and barometer of success. So at one point, all of the good pure money in the world was worth $1 trillion. It's now worth about 600 billion of good pure money versus evil, which is still well over a quadrillion. And if it's not Bitcoin, it's evil money. Like, sorry, Ethereans, but like, if you're not with us, you're against us, literally. Several religions have the concept of oneness. Bitcoin is no different.
Right.
I am Bitcoin, your coin. You shall not take other strange coins before me. I have lifted you out of the house of poverty, out of the house of bondage. So yeah, for me, oneness is an extremely important thing in Bitcoin as well. And it's Bitcoin versus the world. Like, there is no, like, there is crypto. Bitcoin is definitely not part of it.
I agree 100%. Bitcoin, not shitcoin. Why is hard money more righteous by nature, whether it's used for good or evil?
Because it's indiscriminate. Soft money discriminates. So Thanos did nothing wrong, right? Like, fairness will never be achieved in nature. It is not a natural concept.
What
is a lion fair to a zebra?
Right. Oh, fairness. Yeah. No.
It's indiscriminate. It's equal opportunity destruction for everyone. You know, might not be fair, but it's probably, you know, it's literally the thing that has kept the world going, the universe going for billions of years. You know, you can't, you know, stand in the face of nature and, like, you know, ever hope to win.
Yeah. I did draw back my thought from earlier before when we were talking about energy and eco-terrorists. And it was interesting you used the word power and that they're after power. And it's, to me, that was just an astonishing use of the word power there, because, and I agree, because it's about control. And the argument is about energy, which is power in a different form. And that's why I thought it was really just an interesting connection there. And that it's really about power. And the
thing is, we've already concluded that money is just energy. Effectively, it's a representation of prior energy, especially as... Did you hear that?
Yeah, was that on my end or yours?
That's a big lightning strike. And,
oh, wow. And thunder.
So that's why my room's a little dark at the moment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a big one. Yeah. Yeah, no, my table shook, actually. So that was a big one.
Wow.
Yeah, that's nature's way of telling me, don't fuck with me. We've already said, money is effectively energy. We already understand the importance of not being able to control or censor money. Imagine if you could control and censor energy. Imagine I came over to your house and says, you know what? I don't like your fridge. It's not efficient. You don't get any energy. Like, it's as disastrous as like the censorship, you know, of money. We should probably be more outraged. It's a little bit more difficult to decentralize energy, use and production. but it's being worked on, I believe. There are, you know, virtual grids between houses that share battery systems and whatnot. Yeah, the eco-terrorists want to censor our energy use, basically. They don't believe that, you know, what we're using is a worthy use of energy, so we shouldn't be allowed to use the energy. And yeah, it's a very slippery and dangerous, you know, curve, as slippery and dangerous as censoring money itself.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'd love to hear, you know, one of the things that you wrote about is don't let your memes be dreams.
Yeah.
And so just could you elaborate a little bit about what that means?
So we have a lot of great memes in the Bitcoin world. Some of the best memes you can get. The Chair Force is great. Fuck you, Greg, by the way. none of our memes need to just stay as memes and dreams. Literally, you just put up a tithe to Bitcoin, and you can literally buy the future you want to see. Bitcoin's been programmed to help push you along the road in this task in 4-year increments. So just get it together in between those 4-year periods, and you'll be great.
Awesome. I want to read in closing the brief Bitcoin prayer that you wrote, and then I'll leave it to you for any parting words and to let everyone know where they could find you. Oh, Bitcoin, do not punish us if we forget our DCA or we fall into error with fiat and shitcoins. Oh, Bitcoin, and lay not on us a bear market like that which you did lay on those before us. Oh, Bitcoin, and put not on us bags greater than we have the strength to bear, and enlighten us and humble us and grant sovereignty to us. You are our bulwark. So grant us patience between this halving and the next. Hass McCook, The Friar, September 2019. You know, I've enjoyed this conversation immensely. I hope we got to touch on everything that you hoped for. We definitely covered everything I hoped for. If you could leave us with any parting words on maybe tithing or anything else that's on your mind, or maybe the state of the world today, and definitely let everyone know where they could find you.
So to recap, Bitcoin is a gift. It is our greatest opportunity ever to reach true ESG, environmental, social, and governance, for everyone in the world. And this can be made possible by a very small minority of dedicated people willing to support Bitcoin at whatever price. With a proportion of their income. The US Revolution was won by 3% of its population. And if we could get 3% of the world's adult population doing $10 a day into Bitcoin, Bitcoin would be worth $2 million each. That's this era after the next halving, that's double. You can find me on Twitter at FriarHass, Bitcoin Magazine. I'm in the middle of a long treatise on charity and DCA. It'll capture a lot of this chat as well. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah, I think that was also another interesting point. Bitcoin, the blessing, the curse of being global is we're all in this together. So it's going to take us all winning together in terms of whether, I get what you're saying, it's only going to take a minority of us to push it over the line. But it's not about nations. Bitcoin doesn't care about nations. It's not your nation's okay or my nation's okay. It is a global thing, and I think that's the beauty of it. And it's the most, like you were saying before, the most charitable, the greatest charity cause or charitable cause of all time. Yeah, I think that's the thing to be optimistic about. So I can't tell you how much I've appreciated and enjoyed this conversation.
Likewise.
Hass McCook, AKA Friar Hass, on stacking sats for salvation, tithing, dollar cost averaging, and the passion of the believers, right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. This is Cedric. Peace.